As I mentioned in earlier, this style of practice that I offer on this retreat is a kind of practice that I learned from my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, a Burmese teacher, who teaches a very receptive form of Vipassana practice. Many of us might have learned a kind of mindfulness practice, a Vipassana practice, through directing the attention to a particular area of experience, such as the breathing, aiming the attention, focusing on that, and trying to stay with it, noticing when the attention gets pulled off and then coming back to that. We sometimes call that an anchor object or a home base kind of experience. And the practice often that many of us learn initially in meditation or in mindfulness meditation involves some kind of a base object where we choose something to pay attention to and give preference to that. The style that Sayadaw Utejaniya teaches is not doing that. It is a receptive practice where, instead of focusing or aiming our attention at something, it's more like we settle back and recognize that we're aware, and then just are aware of whatever the attention is already most naturally paying attention to. And that will shift. That changes from experience to experience. So if you're just settling back and relaxing and not choosing what to pay attention to, actively or consciously choosing what to pay attention to, you're, let's say, you're conditioning the habits of your mind, the ways in which you have been conditioned in your life, the things that you've tended to pay attention to. Those will tend to be the things that your attention orients to. And so the attention will be on something as you just relax and settle back. But rather than trying to pick something out of the field of everything, it's like we just let our system, our human system, which includes all of our conditioning, let our human system kind of show us what is most relevant to it in this moment. And that's what we can call more of a receptive awareness. I'd say all forms of mindfulness meditation are aiming at helping us to understand our minds, helping us to understand how and why we suffer, how and why we get caught in habits or patterns of reactivity, and how those create dis-ease or stress. Suffering. It may not feel, the word suffering is pretty big. It feels, we may not think what we're experiencing is coming to the level of what we call suffering, but the word stress can be useful too. It's like any form of constriction, contraction, sense of unsatisfactoriness, unease, agitation, any form of that is a form of suffering in the Buddhist understanding. And so what our meditation practice is aiming to is to help us understand how and why that happens. And as we understand how and why the stress, dissatisfaction, unease, suffering happens, we begin to understand how our mind is contributing to that. Habits and patterns of mind that are contributing to that suffering. And as we understand that, it's like our human system wants to move in the direction of well-being, wants to move in the direction of ease, wants to move in the direction of non-stress. And so seeing and understanding, as our system begins to see and understand how it's contributing to stress, it begins to let go of those ways that it's contributing. Often, these ways that it's contributing to stress are below our level of conscious awareness, below our level of understanding of how and why we're contributing. The mindfulness practice helps to reveal that, helps to show us what's going on, And at a deeper level, our system seems to understand things when we give it this additional information that comes from being mindful. Our system, our human system that wants to move in the direction of well-being, wants to move in the direction of ease, our system seems to know more how to move in the direction of ease than we do consciously. There have been so many times when I've been watching something in meditation, seeing the suffering of it, seeing how much constriction and contraction were happening there, and having no clue how to let it go consciously. No idea. It's like, well, I'd let go of this if I knew how. I don't know how to let go of this. But the watching it, the being with it, allowed a transformation, often over time, sometimes over long stretches of time. Sometimes the seeing of it can allow it to release more quickly, and we get the understandings of what's happening in there. Sometimes we just see the release and understand or see, wow, that's let go somehow, and I have no idea how it let go. So, but we're learning with this practice. We're learning about our minds, and more than that, our system is learning about how it's contributing to the suffering. So the primary aim, it really is to establish the kind of mindfulness that helps us to witness our experience, and in many ways to begin to witness or learn how to look at our minds, look at how our minds are contributing. We will be exploring both the body and mind in this receptive practice, because as we open to what's happening in the present moment, as we relax and open to the present moment, we see both body and mind. We see how the body is, we see physical sensations, we notice sounds happening as hearing, we notice we're seeing, smelling, tasting, all of our physical senses, we're aware of that. But we also begin to recognize how we are in relationship to that. We begin to recognize that particular sensations affect us. We like certain sensations. Some sensations are pleasant. We like them. We want to go towards them. Some sensations are unpleasant. We don't like them. We want to move away from them. We see habitual habits and patterns of mind. We see ways in which we tend to habitually react or respond to particular types of experience. And so we start to see kind of how our minds have been conditioned. We start to see the habits and patterns of mind. As we see those, having mindfulness established to be able to hold them, what establishment of mindfulness really means is that there's more capacity for mindfulness. This kind of mindfulness that is non-reactive, non-judgmental, is simply, let's say, curious about the experience of being human. Curious about what it's like to be a human being with something unpleasant arising and having a reaction to it. Feeling of anger or frustration. Oh, what's it like to be a human being feeling frustrated? That kind of mindfulness that can hold that without wanting to fix it or change it, but just curious about learning about it. That's the kind of mindfulness we're looking to establish. In this more receptive style of practice, we kind of get to see the habits and patterns of mind really quickly, because basically we're settling back and seeing, you know, what's going on in there, what's happening, what's already naturally happening. And what's naturally happening in our experience is our conditioning is unfolding in the moment. And so the what we get to see quite quickly is the ways in which our mind is responding and reacting to experience. Sometimes that is unpleasant. Sometimes we see very quickly, we see the ways in which we like things, we don't like things, and what our practice is to expand to that curiosity, that kind of mindfulness that can hold that experience. And so we explore cultivating a kind of mindfulness that's curious about our human experience and that allows what's here to be here with that curiosity. So the establishing of this kind of mindfulness in meditation practice, we kind of aim to remembering mindfulness. In our daily lives, we are more kind of cultivating the capacity to recognize mindfulness in our daily lives. So this aspect of the practice, recognizing that we're aware, this is something that Sayadaw Utejaniya emphasizes a lot. Do you know that you're aware? Kind of a foundational teaching. And right now, if you're listening to what I'm saying, you're hearing what I'm saying, there is awareness there. And if you're kind of checking in, it's like, well, am I aware? If you're asking the question and kind of aware of the words, aware of the meaning of those words, you are aware right now. So you get to answer yes to the question when you ask the question and you kind of know what you're asking. Sometimes that question can kind of pop up as a rote kind of thing in the mind, but so it's not always that when that question comes up in the mind that you are aware. But if there is this sense of yes, I know that I'm asking the question while I'm asking it, then you are aware. Now, the experience of being aware, getting familiar with that experience, it's a subtle experience. It's kind of subtle because it's so prevalent. Awareness is like the air we breathe. It's so here that we often are just not attuned to it. And so Sayadaw points to this checking in, am I aware, as a way to begin to get familiar with what it's like to be aware. And initially, as we check in, we may not know the feeling of it. We just know that we are aware. And that's where we begin. Yes, I know I'm aware. I have no idea how I know that I'm aware. That's okay. You just kind of recognize, yes, I know that I'm aware. So this kind of practice is one of the main avenues that translates the style of practice from sitting practice into daily life. That when we can get more familiar with the experience of being aware and just taking in whatever is that awareness is naturally receiving, that's a very easy kind of mindfulness to carry with us through the day. We don't have to pick something to pay attention to. We can be doing whatever we're doing and being aware. So much more about that as we go in the day. So right now, what I'm going to do is to offer a few kind of suggestions or tools, let's say, a kind of an orientation around this practice. I know many of you have sat this kind of retreat before and are familiar with it, but there's, I think, quite a few of you who may not have that this background. So I want to offer some basic instructions to support this, and then we'll meditate together. Actually, we'll probably take a short break after the instructions before the meditation, so you get a little break for your bodies. The first thing that's really helpful, and I'd say this is true for any form of meditation, but for this form, I really emphasize starting with relaxation. When we relax, and we can start with a relaxation of body, We allow the body to soften, to relax. And we can do this in a couple different ways. We can kind of scan through the body and consciously relax the body. We can kind of sit and just invite a relaxation. Just, kind of maybe checking into places where you know you hold tension and seeing if there can be relaxation. So relaxing the body. As you explore relaxing the body, it creates conditions that support the mind to be able to relax. When our mind is not relaxed, it tends to be caught up in anxieties, worries, concerns, thoughts about past or future, or even thoughts about now, thoughts about the present. But it's caught up, it's kind of swirling around the thoughts as opposed to open and receptive, essentially. So as the body relaxes, it tends to support the mind to be able to relax a little bit too. And we can also, see if there can be a relaxation of mind. One of the ways into that, and we'll do this in the guided meditation, is an analogy that Gil Fronsdahl likes to use. Relaxing, we can kind of think about, okay, my shoulders are a little tight, and we kind of think about relaxing those. There's a way into relaxing the muscles of the body. And Gil says, just envisioning as if your brain were a muscle. Maybe the brain can relax. Maybe you can relax that muscle in the brain. Sometimes he talks about the thinking muscle. For me, that language of maybe the brain can relax has a kind of a an it's kind of got an analogy that really resonates for me to support that mind to let go of kind of being caught up in things. So as the body relaxes, it helps support the mind to relax. And as the mind relaxes, as it's not caught up in thoughts of worries, concerns, it's very naturally the capacity, the natural capacity that we have to be aware of what's happening in the present moment. That what is what tends to be happening when the mind relaxes. So that capacity to be mindful, the capacity to know what's happening in the present moment while it's happening, which is in the terrain of what we'll call wise mindfulness. The mindfulness that we're cultivating is wise mindfulness that has that curiosity, that has that kind of allowing quality that's not reaching for something or pushing something away. The natural mindfulness that just knows what's happening in the present moment while it's happening may or may not have that curiosity. It may be more interested in doing something with what it's aware of. And so simply being aware is not quite enough. There does need to be a little bit of that curiosity. It's not a lot of extra activity, but just the kind of the orientation as we are aware of something to be curious about it. What is this experience as a human experience? Aware of experience in the present moment as experience in the present moment, as opposed to aware of experience as something to do something about. Just this is what's happening. So the awareness there is a natural, the basic awareness is very natural that comes when the mind relaxes. And so as the mind relaxes, it creates conditions that are very supportive for this mindfulness, this curious mindfulness, the mindfulness of wise mindfulness, to be available. So the relaxation kind of puts us in the place where we can begin to recognize that we are aware. So the relaxation is kind of the first piece. And then The next piece is the awareness, recognizing, am I aware? Sayadaw Utejaniya actually, and I call him Sayadaw. Sayadaw just basically means teacher. It's a kind of a title in the Burmese language. Sayadaw uses questions. He encourages that question, am I aware? Sometimes it's useful to shorten it to just aware with a question mark. To just have that curiosity of, am I aware? And again, if you remember to ask that question and know what the question means, you get to answer yes. Now, so you might think, you know, why bother asking the question if I, you know, have the capacity or, you know, to ask the question, why bother asking the question? And I think for myself, as I had that question myself, why bother? Why am I asking the question, am I aware, if I always get to answer yes? Why am I asking that question? And what I began to see is that it oriented the mind to be curious about the experience of being aware. So another way to look at that question is, what is it like to be aware? What is it like to be aware right now? And, you know, you don't have to have an answer to the question. When Sayadaw encourages us to ask questions, he's not encouraging us to think about the answer. It's more of a bringing in that a quality of curiosity. So what is it like to be aware right now? What is it like to be aware? Or how is awareness experienced? Another way to kind of orient to that question. Orienting to that question is more about spurring that curious nature of our minds. And we all come with a curious nature. We're born into these beings with a curious nature. You look at any baby, curiosity is one of the key things that shows up. You know, the babies are just infinitely curious about, you know, their hand. I remember seeing when I was a teenager, the first time I saw a baby discover their hand, you know, just sat there looking at it, you know, just the curiosity of the human mind. And so it's tapping into that natural curiosity that we all have to ask this question. It's not trying to find the answer. It's more seeing if that question allows the system, the curiosity of our mind and body, to open to something perhaps that we haven't recognized before, to something that we don't quite know how to look for. That's one of the benefits, I think, of the receptive style of practice, that when we do a directed style of practice, we choose what we're paying attention to, we always know what we're looking for when we're choosing an experience to pay attention to. And so in the receptive style, we're more opening to kind of the, show me something I don't know. Show me something I'm not so familiar with. And so that's part of this question around, am I aware? Or what is it like to be aware right now? And just tapping into that curiosity and then just seeing. It's like sometimes I think of the asking of those questions is kind of like standing at a door and you're ringing a doorbell. And then you have no idea what's on the other side of that door. So you just wait to see what comes to the door, who opens the door, what happens as the door opens. Maybe the door stays closed and that's what you get to experience. But it's not a trying to look for an answer. It's much more that sense of like just having rung the doorbell and waiting, being curious, being aware in that space. So this is a part of mindfulness, this curiosity about recognizing awareness itself, recognizing being mindful. I use the terms mindfulness and awareness synonymous in this teaching. They're synonymous terms in this teaching. So sometimes I'll use mindfulness and sometimes I'll use awareness. It's always useful to check in with teachers when they use the word awareness, what they mean, because it shades to a lot of different meanings. So right now in this particular teaching, I'm using it synonymous with mindfulness. Though not necessarily a directed mindfulness. So the awareness, am I aware? Recognizing that you're aware. This recognition of awareness in some ways becomes our anchor almost, the thing that we orient to. Rather than choosing an object to attend to, we kind of stabilize the attention with the awareness. Knowing that we're aware. When we stabilize the attention with the awareness, we can then simply recognize what's coming to that awareness, what is being received. Knowing that we're aware is not like turning around and looking at awareness. It's more of a stepping back, the recognition that we're aware, and then we're aware of what is known or received in that field of awareness. So there's what's happening, sight, sound, smells, taste, body sensations, thoughts, emotions, all happening. And then there's the mindfulness that knows that. And so the awareness has a quality of its own, different ways it's experienced at different times, but basically a quality of knowing that we're aware. And then there's what we are aware of. So the first place to land or ground after the relaxation is, am I aware? What is the experience of awareness? And as I said a few minutes ago, we may not quite know that, but orienting to that question over and over again begins to help the mind recognize awareness to the point where it becomes a very distinct kind of experience. Essentially, we recognize the air we're breathing. We begin to recognize that you know, when we're breathing, you know, it's like we can become aware that there's breath coming in. We can become aware that there's air around us. It's a subtle kind of thing. But at the same time, it can be pretty obvious once we attune to it. And similarly with awareness. So this can take time. For me, it took some time to actually get the sense of almost a felt sense of what it's like to be aware. And then the next piece is to be curious about what awareness is naturally already, let's say, already knowing. And not choosing what to aim the attention at, but we're aware, and that awareness is aware of something. So what is it aware of? So we're aware of what? That could be the next question, of what, or what's here? Any experience, it may be body sensation, sight, sound, emotions, moods, thoughts. We don't have to preference. Can just settle back, and this will likely change. And so this is something that we need to get used to. For those of you who have oriented before to paying attention to just one experience like the breath, being in a place of mindfulness where the experience is not stable, where we're not aiming to settle the experience down on one thing, can be a little bit disorienting. It has a different quality to it to see or watch, essentially, the attention shifting from thing to thing. And I talk to a lot of people who in this shift feel like I'm not mindful. Because the attention is going to so many things, it feels like the mind is wandering around. But what's happening if we are aware of, right now there's a sight, a sound, a body sensation, a thought, an emotion. It can change kind of quickly. But if we are aware of that, I have the sense sometimes of following the attention. The attention shifts from a sound to a body sensation to a thought to a feeling, to another body sensation. It shifts. And if you have the sense of following the attention, then that is awareness is present for what's happening. Again, it has a different experience to it than stabilizing on one thing. But over time, you begin to get a sense of the awareness being stable, even as experience is changing. And that's kind of where we hover in a way, is in the awareness. Aware, aware, aware of changing experience. And again, this is part of the reason why this is such a powerful tool for our daily lives. Because in our daily lives, it's like so much of our lives unfold through the responsiveness of our organism to the world. If you know, when I was walking down the street, I was aiming my attention always at one thing, then I might not notice, you know, the car that's driving in front of me. So the receptivity allows us to be more aware of the world as it's unfolding and as our minds are responding to it. So that's something about being aware and noticing what we are aware of. Another piece around this practice that I think goes very nicely into daily life too is an encouragement to a light touch of effort. In the sitting practice, we do a little bit more efforting, and the efforting may be around just kind of reminding yourself to be aware. Just asking that question, am I aware? Is awareness here? What is this awareness like right now? So that reminder about being aware can come in using questions in the sitting practice in particular, and then recognizing or being curious about, and what am I aware of? What is awareness knowing right now? So that's the kind of effort we make. And it's a very light touch. So just enough effort to know, like, this moment of experience. And then we do it again. And we do it again. So in the sitting practice, we do a little bit of that prompting. Just a very light touch, just enough for these like 2 or 3 seconds. We don't try to hold on to anything. The not holding on to experience also allows the attention to be more fluid and the mindfulness to kind of follow the fluidity of what the attention is receiving. So just enough to know right now, just maybe right now you might relax and just notice, you know, what is here? Maybe it's body sensation. Maybe it's hearing now. And how about now, what's being received? Sometimes it can be the same thing for a little while, and then something will happen. A dog barks, and then suddenly the attention is there, or a new sensation appears in the body. A thought arises. So just a light touch of effort. We're not trying to hold on so much to the mindfulness. It's more that we're just reminding ourselves to be aware. In fact, that's the very first instruction Sayadaw Utejaniya gave me. Said, the only work you need to give your mind is to remind yourself to be aware. In daily life, we'll talk a little bit later about that. There can be a little bit of reminding at various times, but there's some other things that can support us in daily life as well. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. As we explore being aware with that light touch of effort, there is a little bit of a momentum of mindfulness that begins to build. A little bit of stability for maybe even a few moments. It could be as long as a minute or two. And the mind will wander, but there will be a little bit of momentum that builds. As the momentum builds of being able to be aware for longer, We can call this continuity of mindfulness. This is where mindfulness begins to be established, the establishment of mindfulness. There's more moments of mindfulness linked together, basically. So as that happens, that kind of the combination of the effort and the mindfulness begins to result in a momentum of mindfulness. And that momentum of mindfulness is concentration in this practice. Often we think of concentration as being a focus or a being able to hold on to one object. In this practice, concentration is about the stability of the mindfulness, not the stability of the objects of mindfulness. So if we are able to know, be aware moment after moment after moment, that is what concentration is. And so these three, mindfulness, effort, and concentration, the three key tools that the Buddha offers in the Eightfold Path, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration, come into this practice. The wise concentration has a slightly different flavor than some of you may be aware, be familiar with. The concentration of the stability of mind feels that is knowing changing experience feels a little different than the stability of mind that's aiming to one thing and staying there. In that case, both the experience and the awareness get much more quiet. So it moves into what a lot of tranquility, a lot of stillness. In the this more receptive practice, there's a stability and can be a sense of ease and calm in the awareness, but there can be a lot of stuff going on in our minds that we are aware of. So the feeling of concentration can feel a little bit different. Working with the mind that wanders is a little bit different too in this practice. Often when we work with the waking up after our mind has wandered in a practice where we use aiming or directing the attention after the mind wanders, often what we immediately do is come back to the object that we had been paying attention to. So it's like, oh, the mind's been wandering, come back to the breath. In this practice, there's nothing to come back to except recognizing that awareness has arisen. That's the key kind of piece to orient around. As soon as you notice that the mind has been wandering, as soon as you notice that, mindfulness is already back. And so curious about that, oh, this is awareness. Aware again. Awareness has re-arisen. In fact, that moment is a great place to begin to get familiar with the experience of being aware. Because there's a slight difference between what it was like a few moments ago when the mind was wandering and what it's like now when you're consciously aware. That contrast makes it easier to recognize, oh, this is what it's like to be aware. Feels like the light comes on. Feels like there's a kind of infusion of knowing there. So that's the first thing to recognize with the wandering mind. Notice that awareness has returned. And then what is obvious? What are you aware of? What is obvious is the question I often use. What is obvious? For some people, that doesn't resonate so much. But just for me, it's like, well, what is already here? What is obvious in this moment? So what have you become aware of? Sometimes in noticing what is obvious or what we've become aware of, we may notice that there's a little bit more tension in our system. Often when the mind wanders, it wanders into habitual thoughts, patterns, habits, and it can create, construct tension. If our mind wanders into a conversation we were having, a charged conversation we were having with a friend or a partner, that tension can be constructed. And that may be what you experience when the mindfulness returns. And so if you notice that there's tension that has crept back into the system, just notice that, be aware of that. That's what's obvious in that moment. And it's often skillful when you notice that to kind of step back to the exploring relaxation for a few moments. There's nothing in particular we have to bring our attention back to And so taking some time to cultivate the conditions that support being aware can be useful in that moment. Relaxation, key support there. And so when the mind wanders, recognize the awareness. When you notice that the mind has wandered, you recognize the mind is back, the awareness is here. What's here? If there is tension or kind of a sense of tightness, see if there can be relaxation of body, relaxation of mind, and then open again. Okay, am I aware? What's here? Sometimes in returning from wandering, you can also notice, and this can be surprising and fun, that the mind has actually wandered into more relaxation. You know, if the mind goes into a kind of a spacing out or a kind of a drifting, as opposed to a kind of charging out into some kind of a thinking of about something in particular, if it's more of a letting go or a drifting quality, when we wake up into that, sometimes there's more relaxation. So the experience in waking up into that can sometimes be more ease, more calm, more spaciousness. So that's another great thing to notice. And if that's there, just open to that. Oh, there's relaxation here. There's ease here. There's spaciousness here. That's what's happening in this moment. And then again, just like be curious what's being received. For a little while, it may just be that sense of spaciousness or a kind of a floaty experience. And then there'll be the sound of the refrigerator that starts, and you know that, or a sensation that arises in the body, and you know that. You don't have to look for anything. So the last piece I'll bring in, and I know I've been talking for a while, but I think I found it useful to just orient to these pieces. The last piece I'll bring in is a kind of a talking point, an instruction before we take a short break and then do a practice together, is noticing what we are aware of, stabilizing the mindfulness, noticing that we're aware of what we're aware of with a light touch, gets us a long way towards stabilizing that mindfulness. But so often, our habits of mind, the way we've been conditioned, influences how we're paying attention. And that those influences of our conditioning can often be hidden from us. We may not be aware of kind of our relationship to experience. It's just so habitual. Again, it's like the things that we're habituated to tend to be things that we don't recognize. So Sayadaw Tejaniya teaches that it's not just enough to know what awareness is aware of. We have to kind of be curious about how our mind is in relationship to what's happening. And that's a place where often we're not so consciously aware. So the orienting to the question, what is the relationship to what's happening? Sayadaw uses the term, the attitude, and he uses the question, what's the attitude? What's the relationship? How am I in relationship to experience? Something's happening, and you know, very quickly, we like it, we don't like it. We want it, we want to get rid of it. We want to fix it or change it. Do something about it, have an agenda about it. So that's the piece that's often behind the scenes in our minds. We're not so aware of those agendas, those wantings, those relationships. And that place, that is essentially where the movement to that constriction, the stress, the unease, that's where it happens. And so the orienting to or curious about how is the mind in relationship to experience begins to reveal the ways in which we are unwittingly contributing to suffering. And so if this is an important part of the practice, it helps to reveal what's going on behind the scenes. So in checking in, what's my relationship to experience? I'd say there's roughly four flavors of relationship that you might notice. The first three are related to habitual patterns of reactivity. We want something to happen. We want it to keep happening. So there's a wanting, a leaning towards wanting something to happen. There's a kind of a pulling away, the second one, pulling away from experience, an aversion, wanting something to stop happening, not liking what's happening. That's the second flavor we might notice. The third flavor is more around delusion. This one's harder to see, and at some point in the week, I'll talk in much more depth around how we can see delusion. But I'll point to two key pieces. One is kind of the quality of mind that is disconnected, you know, kind of checked out. The quality maybe of boredom or of feeling like something's unimportant or irrelevant, that kind of like distancing from or just disconnection from, that can be a flavor of delusion. The other key flavor of delusion are views and beliefs, ideas about what should be happening, what shouldn't be happening. The shoulds, the ideas about, you know, this is how things should be going. So if you hear a should in your mind, if an attitude or if you, you know, in checking the relationship to experience, it's like, it shouldn't be like this. Well, some of that may be aversion and some of it is the should. Some of it is the belief of what things should be like. So that's a form of delusion. Those views and beliefs become filters. You know, it's not necessarily, the belief itself is not necessarily a delusion. But not recognizing that we are seeing experience through a belief, not knowing the belief is operating as we're receiving experience, that's where the delusion comes in. And so really useful to be kind of become aware of what beliefs are happening. That's a form of kind of beginning to see the delusion aspect of our relationship to experience. So those three, greed, aversion, delusion as relationships to experience. The fourth relationship to experience is essentially the relationship that Sayadaw calls wise attitude, skillful relationship to experience, helpful, wholesome relationship to experience. And that is basically, there's many flavors of it, but it's basically that non-reactive quality of mind. The feeling like, this is okay, no problem. No problem. That is, you know, that can actually be an attitude that is missed. You know, you're sitting at a traffic light, you know, perhaps you're wishing the traffic light to change, you know, so there's some wanting there. But, you know, if you just come back in and it's like, oh, here it is right now. I'm sitting here. I'm sitting at a traffic light. I don't have anything to do right now. I can just sit here and be with myself. Like, no problem. That can be the relationship. And as we begin to get the feeling or the flavor of the mind that isn't reactive, we begin to get the taste of wise mindfulness, of skillful mindfulness, that allowing non-reactive, non-judgmental flavor. There's different flavors that might come in here. Maybe curiosity might be there, or a feeling of connection, care can feel like love, or it can be patience, can be calm. Lots of different flavors can come in there. And so sometimes in kind of being curious about, well, what is the relationship? And again, Sayadaw encourages a question. How am I in response to this? What's here? How am I? What's the attitude? In asking the question, you might not notice anything. You know, it might be obviously greed or aversion or delusion. Or it might be kind of like, I don't know, what's here. I mean, if there's not something obvious, you could try on, well, is there calm? Is this ease? And see, maybe there is okayness. Maybe it's okay. Get familiar with what it's like to be okay. Neither like really great or really, stuck on something. This experience of not suffering can have a quiet kind of feeling, an experience of non-clinging, non-suffering. Doesn't necessarily stand out to us as like the most startling thing at first. It can just be really quiet. It's like, yeah, no problem. Our minds, as we start our meditation practice, as we kind of begin investigating our minds, we tend to see that our minds are habituated to pretty obvious things. It's like we go for the highs, we even go for the lows at times. We want to feel something really obvious. This experience of not suffering, not greed, non-aversion, non-delusion can be pretty quiet. But as we begin to attune to it, we begin to taste the sweetness of it. We begin to taste the. One teacher said we need to learn to acquire the taste for this. Michelle McDonald used that phrase. We need to acquire the taste for this. Because we are so habituated to getting really loud flavors, really strong flavors. This is a subtle flavor. It's like the loud or very strong flavors. We need to get those out of our tongue for a while so that we can start to taste that flavor of non-reactivity. So, in exploring the attitude, as we look at this, as we begin to recognize that we have all these attitudes running around, it's actually good news to see them, to see the attitude of greed and know that it's there. It's way better to see it than not see it, because when we're not seeing it, it's kind of driving the bus. It's driving the show. It's making choices for us. When greed is operating unseen, it's operating in our minds, aiming us to do things, choose things, act on things. So it's way better to see it than not see it. And one of the things that Sayadaw says often is we get to know wise attitude. We get to wise attitude. We get to that place of non-reactivity by getting really familiar with all of the reactivity, getting familiar with the attitudes of greed, aversion, and delusion. And so it's not like we're seeing these attitudes and trying to get rid of them. We're seeing them so that they then, so when we recognize an attitude, it's like before we've seen it, before we've recognized it, it's been kind of behind the scenes. It's been informing how we've been aware. As we become aware of it, it's like that attitude can move out of how we're paying attention into just another thing that we're paying attention of. And so recognizing, oh yeah, this thing is, this unpleasant sensation is happening and I don't like it. That's what's happening right now. It's kind of like we can step back into, it's okay that I don't like it. That's what's happening. I don't have to get rid of the not liking. Just have to be aware of it. Not liking, this is what it's like to be a human being, not liking experience. That has, as we begin to get familiar with that, as we begin to get familiar with the human experience of our reactivity, I said early on, the mind begins to learn how to shift and let go of those reactivities. Not something often we know how to do. So, to summarize the instructions, relax. Recognize that you're aware. Notice what you're aware of with a light touch, not a lot of striving to hold on to experience, just this moment. And from time to time, check in how you are in relationship to experience. So it's not a lot of instructions, but it takes a little bit of explaining. So, you don't have to remember everything that I've said. If you want to remember things, it's like relax, recognize awareness, receive what's happening, and occasionally check the attitude. So let's take a 5-minute break. We'll come back at, just in 5 minutes. I don't know what your time zones are. So in 5 minutes, and then we'll try a meditation together.